Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Tonight, our 40-minute speaker is Dan G. from Garden Grove.
Hi, everyone. My name's Ann, and I'm an alcoholic. Is this one?
Yeah.
Well, there's another one, so I wasn't sure. That's right. I want to thank Mike for asking me to come share tonight. I'm really grateful to be here. Thank you for welcoming me. I want to welcome you if you're new to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. We're glad that you're here, and I want you to know the program does work. Welcome to our out-of-town visitors, and also happy birthday to Rocky, 18 years. That's great. Okay, should I make an announcement about this? No? Okay. My sobriety date is May 29th, 2004. My home group is Bellflower Big Book Group up in Bellflower. My sponsor's name is Karen H. She's been my sponsor my entire sobriety. And my home group's been my home group my entire sobriety. I'll just tell you a little bit about what I used to be like and what happened to me and what I'm trying to be like today. I was born and raised in Iowa. I'm the oldest of three children. I have two younger brothers, a mom and a dad, and you know, one of my parents had mental illness, and sometimes they were medicated and sometimes they were not. And for a long time I thought that's what was wrong with me. I just grew up in a very unpredictable home, and I was full of fear and anger, and I didn't like anything, but I wanted you to like me, so I acted like I liked it, and I was just very much this weird kid. And neither one of my parents was alcoholic, so I really didn't know what alcoholism looked like. And I didn't know what was happening to me when I started drinking. And, you know, as a young person, like I said, I felt very ill at ease. I was thinking about myself all the time, wondering what you thought of me. I felt very uncomfortable on a playground with other kids. Other kids would be talking to each other, and I'm like, how do you do that? Like, how do you do small talk? And I didn't understand it, and so I started to act out a lot. And one of the things I did at that time was I would try to make you laugh, and I would goof off a lot, and I would end up getting in trouble at school a lot. And that was kind of my first thing I did. And then when my finally got to my first drink, I was in eighth grade, and my parents had gone away on their anniversary. I was supposed to be babysitting my two younger brothers, but I don't really know what happened to them that night. But they're alive. They're fine. But I have never regained my memory from that night. So my parents went away for their anniversary, and their anniversary was May 29th also. So the day I got my sobriety date is the same day as the first day I drank, just 14 years apart. And so they had gone away for their anniversary. I invited two 8th grade boys over and an 8th grade girl over, and my parents had had a party, so there was a crate of hard liquor in the basement, and I got the bottle of Jose Cuervo that hadn't been opened, and I popped it open, and I drank out of the bottle because I intuitively knew to do that, and we started passing the bottle, and it didn't taste bad to me. It didn't burn. I liked it. It went down, and I knew I was doing something bad, and I knew I was up to no good, and I liked that, and, you know, because I was like the goody-two-shoes athlete, cheerleader, honor student, and I was over it. And so we started drinking it, and I started to feel like all that angst and just self-centered fear and self-centeredness just kind of start to mellow out, you know, and I started to really start to feel the effects of that alcohol, and I started laughing and being silly and engaging in some inappropriate behavior for an 8th grade girl. And then I thought, you know what? This is my house. This is my booth. They need to get their own. And I locked myself in the guest bedroom and finished it. And because I thought the boys were going to drink it all. And then the next thing I know, it's 4 a.m. My parents are home. My friends are gone. I don't know where anyone is. I don't know where the bottle is. I'm just like, did I get away with this? Because my dad is not a timeout dad. And it would have been bad. So I did get away with it. And you know, I woke up in a pool of liquid on the top floor of the house. I really don't know how I got there because we were in the basement drinking. So that was my first experience drinking, and that was going to be the way I drank. I was never a social drinker. I was social for about 30 minutes max, and that was the best I could do. And I was one of these people that gravitated towards hard liquor, and I would go to these keg parties, you know, in the Midwest, in the fields, or on some land off a gravel road or a bonfire or whatever we were up to, you know, and And I would go find the bikers with the whiskey in their saddlebags, or I'd go find someone who had the bottle, you know, because I was like, keg beer took me a long time. And I would eventually get to it, but I needed some hard liquor. And, you know, I wasn't a daily drinker right away. I just drank when I could on the weekends. I knew I wanted to do that again. I knew it made me feel good. That's all I knew. You know, I knew I had fun. I knew I didn't care anymore when I drank. And, you know, I was a good student, and my dad was someone in the community, so I tried to be a good girl. Like, I need to tell you that when I went into eighth grade, we moved to this small town in Iowa, and, you know, everyone knew everyone's business, and I had to be the good girl, and I tried really hard, but I didn't succeed, and I got a reputation I didn't want that my dad didn't want for me, my mom didn't want for me. They were very embarrassed and ashamed of me, and you know, I was drinking on the weekends initially, and then in the middle of high school, when I was about 15, 16, my parents got divorced, and I started to drink almost on a daily basis until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I know there are days I did not drink, I just don't remember them very well, because most days I did drink. And probably about my junior year of high school, my mom starts telling me, you're a budding alcoholic, you really need to watch your drinking. And I had straight A's. I said, look at this report card. I don't know, what are you talking about, you know? And I would come, basically what was happening was I was going to school and being the good girl during the day, being in the sports and the athletics and the school newspaper and all that stuff. And then I go to my way too older boyfriend / local drug dealer's house. And I wasn't even doing the drugs. I was just there to drink. And I would drink there all night and then come home in the morning and go to school. And that was what I did, you know. And my mom was saying this to me, and I didn't understand what she was saying. I thought I was doing it because I wanted to. I was having fun. I was partying. Leave me alone. I'm just a free spirit, okay? And that's how I felt. And the reason she said that was her dad died of alcoholism. But I never knew him because he died when my mom was 15. And I always heard about his drinking, but I didn't know this person, you know. And my mom and dad are both from North Carolina, and so I was raised in Iowa, and so I never saw any of the alcoholic members of my family, you know? So I just didn't understand what she was saying to me. And, you know, recently I was with my coworker, on Ancestry.com, and he pulled up a copy of my grandpa's death certificate. And the primary cause of death is delirium tremens. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I guess he was an alcoholic. And, you know, so... But I couldn't hear it, you know, I just couldn't hear it, and I just told her to leave me alone, and that's the podium version of how I talked to my mom. I was very, very disrespectful to her. And, you know, I graduated from high school, then I went to college, and I started off as a biology pre-med student, and, you know, when you're drinking like I am, I don't go to class, and so I went from a straight A student to 3 D's and an F. And so I switched my major, and there's something where I write a paper and turn it in at the end of the term, and I graduated with a really low GPA, and I moved to California in 1998. I drove out here to San Diego, actually, in 1998 by myself, and my parents weren't like, please stay, we'll miss you. They were like, here's your stuff, don't let the door hit you, you know. I didn't have a cell phone or anything. I just drove out here by myself. I mean, I was 21 years old. And so, prior to that moving out here, I need to tell you, I was trying to fix myself. I knew something was wrong with me. I wouldn't say it was alcoholism. I just knew something was wrong with me. And so in eighth grade, where I'm from, half the town where I'm from does transcendental meditation. So I learned how to do transcendental meditation. Then I became a vegetarian. Then in college, I joined a bunch of churches and was speaking in tongues and rubbing olive oil on the walls or drinking vodka out of the left hand, you know. And then I went to a psychologist when I was in college because I was feeling really suicidal for some reason my sophomore year of college. And he told me I was in a sophomore slump, and I was like, okay. And you know what? He didn't ask me about my drinking. I didn't tell him because it wasn't an issue in my mind, you know. And then I moved to California to try and go to more school to get a career to fix myself. And that was kind of the reason I came out here, and to get away from Iowa because Iowa was the problem. I had a really, really bad reputation, and it was just bad, so I had to get out of there. And I moved to San Diego, and, you know, unfortunately, more of the same things happened out here that happened back in Iowa, because just simply by moving into a different state, it's not going to change it. And I drank the same way, and the same things happen. I come to in strange places with strange people. I don't, you know, the ocean's on me. This is the kind of stuff that's happening to me, you know. And I'm really glad the Pacific Ocean is so cold. I grew up going to beaches in the southeast and where it's warmer, and it woke me up. You know, you could have a different speaker for some of the stuff. I would go off to the beach and pass out, and the tide would come in. Anyway, So I went to school and I got a career going, and that was going to be the beginning of the end for me. Basically what happened was, over a period of time, a little bit by little bit, my bills aren't getting paid, little bit by little bit. I'm not talking to my friends anymore that I grew up with, because I can't show up for my friends. I'm very selfish and self-centered, and so I don't show up for your wedding. I don't call you. And at first they kind of put up with it, and then they just go away. So at the end it was really lonely in that sense for me, but what happened was, I knew I wasn't safe for myself anymore, and so I began just to drink vodka on the floor of my apartment. And I had gotten this career. I got a job in Orange County off the 55, and I was living in Lake Forest in an apartment, and I had a bed because I had worked at a furniture store before, and I had a wicker love seat that I got out of a dumpster that I spray painted, and I had a TV, and that's all I had. And I would just lay on the floor and drink vodka at night, and my whole theory was, you can't fall if you're already there. And so I thought it was the safest thing for me, just to drink on the floor. And I was like 26 when I started doing that. And anyway, so I wasn't going out, I wasn't socializing anymore, because I was a bar drinker for a long time. I loved to go hear live music and get really messed up and just be in the moment, you know, and listen to music, and I couldn't do that anymore. And, you know, my friend who I went to school with lived in Lakewood, and she asked if I wanted to live with her and be her roommate. She just bought a home, and I said sure, and I moved up there with her, and she wanted to go out, and that was a big deal for me, because I couldn't, I was like, how am I going to stand up? And seriously, it was just bad. And so I went out with her to Hollywood to meet some men or something that she knew, and I drank out, as I always do, and we're in some fancy Mercedes on the 101, and I'm just throwing up all over the car, all over the 101, and it wasn't any different than any other night, but I was around other people, and so it was very embarrassing for me. And I thought, well, nobody else is throwing up in this car but you, and, you know, this is very embarrassing. And it was no different than any other night of my drinking, but I saw my drinking that night for the first time, and that was about 6 months before I got sober. And so that led me to what I call part of my Chapter 3 experiments. I tried to have a Diet Coke between my martinis, because I was a vodka drinker, and I never drank a Diet Coke because I started with a martini. And what happens to me is, once I put alcohol in my body, I just want more alcohol. That's what my body wants. I don't want a Diet Coke. It sounds like a stupid idea. And then it really does. And then the last thing I did before I got sober is, I tried really hard not to drink Monday through Wednesday. That was my big goal. And I couldn't get past Monday. And I was terrified. Completely terrified. And the other thing that was going on towards the end was, I was thinking about ending my life. I had this career, I had the salary, I had things going on, and I felt like nothing was good. It was dark, it was empty, it was lonely. I wanted to be off the planet. And that's the real brief version of it. And so my idea was, I was going to go to Walmart and get a gun and blow my brains out in the backyard, call 911 right before sending out the dog out, scoop me up, take me out, put a tarp behind my head before I did it. And that was my whole thought process. And so I was in Newport Beach, actually, and I drank at my boss's house that night. I normally didn't go out, and it was a weird night. I drove home on a blackout in the 405, and it came to on May 29th, 2004, and it wasn't, I'm going to get sober and come to AA and do these 12 steps and live a different life and live a better life. It was, I can't do this anymore. And I didn't know what that meant, but I was like, I can't do this anymore. And so I was going to try not to drink that day. And that was all, as far as I thought it out. And I always drank in the morning right away on the weekends. And so I was like, I got to get out of my house. And so I found myself at the Lakewood Public Library. And I just thought I was going to get a biography or something. And I didn't have a library card. And I'm about 30 pounds heavier than I am right now. And my skin is really red and blotchy. The white parts of my eyes are yellow. I do not look good. I do not smell good. People used to comment about my smell a lot at work. I was getting talked to at work a lot because I would try to go get all that body butter, you know, from like Body Shop, and it'd be like mango vodka smell, and I was trying to hide it. And I did. It stunk. And so I found myself standing in the aisle in the library about alcoholism. I didn't mean to be standing there. And I wasn't. It was way in the back corner of the library too. I was probably just hiding from people. But I got a bunch of books on that because I thought in my mind I was having the beginnings of a possible drinking problem. And I went and checked the books out, and the lady kind of looked at me sideways. I'm pretty sure I was still in my pajamas because that's how I rolled. And I just got that stuff, and I went to my room, and I started to read the books, and I started identifying with they had alcohol abuse and alcohol dependency, and I was hitting all the categories. And then I was like, oh, God, I was hitting all these categories, and I thought, I'm going to go to work. So I drove down to Orange County, and we were closed, the business, and one of my bosses was sober. He's still sober, an Alcoholics Anonymous, 20 years at the time. And his anonymity had been broken by my secretary, who'd been sober 5 years. I wonder why. And he was the only one that walked in that day. And I took it as a little sign that maybe I was doing the right thing that day. I didn't tell him. You know, I'm not going to tell the AA member. I'm trying not to drink. And so, because it's just, you know, for today. And I was already doing one day at a time. And I need to, but I took it as a sign that I was doing the right thing. And the other thing I need to tell you is I met my Aunt Donna. She lives in Oahu. And she is my mom's sister, and she's sober. She turned 29 in August, and she was 20 years sober at the time as well. I met her a year before I got sober. Shows you how close my family is. But I met her when I was drinking. And so, and she was, I'm like, does this bother you? And she's like, no. And I was like, okay. And so, I need to tell you, I don't go to AA for 6 weeks, and I don't drink for 6 weeks. And that's probably the worst 6 weeks of my life so far. And what happened was I detoxed at home. I did not understand what was happening to me. Nobody told me, you're an alcoholic, and you're detoxing now, you know? I just thought I was going nuts. And I was sweating through my sheets, and I was shaky, and I was very sick, and I couldn't sleep right. So if you're new and you're having trouble sleeping, I want you to know I didn't sleep right for 4 months. And I did sleep during that time, but I would be up for 3 nights, sleep for 4 days, up for 3 nights. I mean, it was just bad. And I would rub my legs on my fitted sheet. I was just going crazy. And at the end of that 6 weeks, I thought, I can't drink and I can't not drink. I'm going to have to end my life. This stopping drinking just amplified how bad it is. And I didn't realize that that's in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I was at the jumping off place ready to do this program. I didn't know that because I didn't have a big book. You know, that's just what my brain did. And I need to tell you that my Aunt Donna was calling me every day from Hawaii during that six-week period. So even though I'm not in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous yet, I am being 12-stepped by my aunt, who I barely know at that time. I know her well now. But, you know, she was saying things to me like, honey, normal drinkers don't go into a blackout every time they drink. And I said, well, if you drank as much vodka as I did, you would. You know, that was my answer. And I was just like, what's your point? And, you know, she was telling me all this stuff. And so at the end, I thought I needed to end my life at that 6 weeks. And the only good thing that happened is I dropped weight really quickly by not drinking. And, which was a bonus. And my boss noticed I physically looked different. And so he said, Ann, what are you doing? Are you working out? What's going on? You know, and my coworker Gary came out and he's like, that's because Ann stopped drinking. And I was like, thanks for the public service announcement, Gary. And I was just like, ugh. And so I didn't think I needed to come to AA, you know. I didn't think, in my head, I just didn't realize, you know. And Steve didn't say anything. And so we'd have these meetings around a boardroom table, and Steve would never sit down. And he'd walk around, and when no one was looking, he'd be like, how's the non-drinking thing going? Like, you do this. And I was like, I don't know. Something about ending my life at this point. I'm like, And so he eventually came into my office and shut the door, and it was one alcoholic talking to another, and that's when my journey to my first meeting started. And he said, you know, Ann, and he told me a little bit about his story. He said, you know, Ann, this might be the only window open in the cosmos for you to walk through to get sober, and I suggest you walk through it. And I was like, and I believed him, because I had my Diet Coke experiment, and I had my Monday through Wednesday experiment that didn't work, and I didn't know why I wasn't drinking for that period of time, and I was kind of freaking out, and I didn't know what to do, and I was getting more and more depressed. And he said, you know, you have to go to Santa Barbara for work tomorrow. Why don't you have this CD? And he loved music, so I thought it might be music. You know, he didn't tell me he was an AA speaker. And so I went to Santa Barbara, and I threw this CD in my car, and it was Sister Maurice from the Bronx. And I laughed, and I cried, and she said, Alcoholics Anonymous taught her to what thine own self be true really means, and to love thy neighbor as thyself, not instead of thyself. And those things really resonated with me, and I brought the CD back to him, and I said, hey, can I have another CD, you know, because I'm going to stay sober on CDs. I don't need to go to your meetings. And that's how I looked at it. And he's like, you know what, why don't you go to a meeting with my friend Lisa in Newport? And you know, when your boss tells you go to a meeting, you say sure on the outside. And so, because I had been talked to multiple times by the administrator, they said, we like your work, but you are really unpredictable. And I had some people quit on me that were working for me that said I was a psychotic something and unpredictable. And I would slam doors and I would throw things across the room and I would cuss. And because I was detoxing at work every day, and which I didn't know. And, you know, I worked in the business environment, but that's not how you're supposed to act. And so I went with her to my first meeting. It was at 15th and Balboa on a Monday night. It was a beginner's meeting at that church there. And I thought, I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't know anything about AA. And I went in there and everyone was like really nice and smiling, saying, oh, are you new? And you know, I'm 6 weeks dry. And I'm like, don't come near me. Don't touch me. I don't want to talk. Stop smiling. There's nothing to smile about, you know? I was like that a lot my first whole year and maybe into the second year. I was really Mrs. Not Nice Lady. And so I just was not in a good space. And so I didn't stand up as a newcomer. And so if you're new and you're just checking it out, that's how I was when I got here. I'm like, I'm not sure I want to join this yet. And so they had the readings, and I'll never forget the first time I heard Chapter 5, how it works. I just sat on the edge of my seat like it was the solution. It is the solution. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And so every time I hear Chapter 5 in a meeting, I try to be so quiet because I remember what it was like to hear it for the first time and how important it was to me. And then they had different people coming up to the podium and sharing. And, you know, they had different stories. I mean, some had been in prison. Some had lost their kids. Some were homeless. I didn't have those experiences, but I identified with their alcoholism, what alcohol did for them and to them, and how it was their solution for living for a long time until it wasn't. And I really identified with that. And, you know, we got done. Lisa bought me my first big book, and she said, meet me at this meeting tomorrow. And I kind of just kept following her because my, you know, plan B was death. So I just kind of, this was literally the last house on the block for me. So I started to go to different meetings with her for about 2 weeks. And I eventually, during that 2 week period, stood up and said, I'm Anna and I'm an alcoholic. And I cried when I said it. And I got my chip. And, you know, I was like, the gig's up. I have to do something about this. And she said, you know, when you're living in Lakewood, why don't you go to Bellflower Big Book Group, ask for Karen or Johnny? And I'm like, okay. And so I drive to Bellflower. I don't know anything about this meeting. I had been going to smaller meetings in Orange County, and it was a very large speaker meeting on Monday night. You are all welcome. We recently moved locations, so there's always seats available now. And I said, excuse me, is Karen or Johnny here? When I got there, I don't know anyone. I don't know much. I'm 2 weeks into AA, right? And so they just pointed, and I said, okay. And I walked up to Karen and said, hey, Karen, I'm Ann. Lisa sent me. She's like, oh, do you have a sponsor? And I said, no, I don't even know what a sponsor is. And she's like, I'm going to be your sponsor. Go get in the greeting line. And I'm like, okay. And she's like, call me at 7:30 tomorrow morning. And I'm like, okay. And so I started doing that. And I've been calling her at 7:30 every day in the morning for 9 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she gave me very clear-cut direction. And she, you know, at the time I thought she was a real hard-nosed sponsor and really strict, and I'm so glad she was, because I really needed that, because if I was given an inch, I would have taken it and I've been off and out of here. You know, so she got me really busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to get on my knees and pray to a God I didn't understand or believe in, and I had to write a gratitude list, and I wasn't grateful. She had to tell me what to write down initially. I was like, what am I supposed to do on this? You know, I was like, what the hell? And then she had me read the 24-hour day book, and I was so angry when I was newly sober. I think I had been stuffing so many emotions for so long by drinking that I didn't know what to do. When all that stuff came up when I got sober, I didn't know how to deal with it, so I just dealt with it how my comfort zone was just to be angry when I was so full of fear. I'll just be angry, you know, and that doesn't work for me anymore today. I still can do it, but it's not working anymore. So, you know, I had this problem where when I was really early sober, I would twist my stomach skin and punch myself. I was just so mad. And so she made me read the 24-hour day book 3 times. I wasn't allowed to leave my room when I woke up. So she just kind of really helped me. And I had to call my AA sisters, the other women she was sponsoring. I had to call people every day. I had to show up at the meeting a half hour early. I had to have a commitment in that meeting. She started making me give new girls a rise right away so they would make me act nicer than I was. And, you know, she has had me so busy. And so that, like, I would go to work And then I'd go straight to a meeting. I was living off Taco Bell. And, you know, I would just, that's how my first year was. And I needed it. I just really needed it to be like that. And I found out later from my sponsor, she didn't tell me this at first, a lot of people were coming up to her saying, you know, she's really angry. We think she might need medication. You know, I've been hearing that at work. And they were like, she really might need a psychiatrist. And I have no opinion on that at all. Believe me, I come from a family with mental illness. I really have no opinion. And my sponsor, and I'm so grateful she said this, she's like, you know what, we're going to try the 12 steps. And if that doesn't work, we'll talk about getting a doctor. And I'm so grateful because the 12 steps have worked for me. You know, they really have. I just have to keep doing it. And I went through the steps as they're outlined in our big book with my sponsor. And, you know, I had to do my fourth step. And the day I had to read my fifth step was February 5th, 2005. She brought me a calendar that was her sister's that had passed away. And it said to talk about cleaning out your heart. And it was kind of cool. And so I got in a big fight with my sponsor that day. I'm like, I don't trust you, blah, blah, blah. And she really is a saint. She put up with so much for me. It's amazing. And so I read her my fifth step, and she's like, get a different color pen out. I'm like, what? And I didn't write anywhere on the last column. If you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous, the inventory is where we write about all our resentments, our fears, and the sex inventory, and it's a four-column inventory. And the last column is where I was at fault or I had made a mistake. A lot of people call it my part, and it was selfish, self-seeking, fearful, or dishonest, and I never wrote dishonest anywhere in my inventory at all. And so she made me get a different color pen out and start writing dishonest. And I was like, I didn't lie. She goes, you didn't tell anyone what was really going on. You are dishonest by omission. And I never could see that. And thank God for a sponsor, because I would never have seen that my pattern a lot of times is I'm fearful, I'll lie to you because I'm not going to tell you what's really going on with me. And even if you're hurting my feelings or you're upsetting me or you're using me, I'm going to act like everything's okay because I don't want confrontation. I don't want conflict, what I perceive to be conflict. You know, my sponsor has reminded me that it's called communication, not conflict. And, you know, and I have a really great sponsor. And so, you know, I got to see that for the first time. And what that looks like in my life is I want you to like me and I'll act like everything's okay, but really I'm mad and I'm hurt or I'm angry, but I act like everything's okay and then I'm tough as nails on the outside. And I build that resentment and I drink over it. And that's how I operated my whole life, you know. And so after I read her that, she had me do 6 and 7 and write my amends or who I owe amends to. And we started to do the amends. And most of my amends are pretty non-eventful, you know. I thought my mom and I have always been very close and I kind of thought that would be easy, you know. And basically how my amends went were, you know, I apologize for X, Y, and Z. I was wrong. Please, if there's anything else I'm forgetting, please let me know what I can do to make that right, you know, something to that effect. My mom's like, well, remember when you stole X, Y, and Z and blah, blah, blah. I was like, whoa, I didn't know that was going to be that way. But we're cool. We're really close. And so I had $14,000 in credit card debt. I paid that off in about 4 years, you know. Because when I finished college, they gave me a $10,000 credit card. I had no job, and I went to Europe. I mean, I just do stupid things. And so I don't know why I got that card. Anyway, so the one that I want to tell you about is my dad. My father and I were not speaking for the years leading up to me getting sober. We were somewhat estranged from one another. It wasn't like we hated each other. It was just sort of one of those situations where it was better if we didn't interact. And, you know, my sponsor had me do that amend a little differently. She said, you know, Ann, I want you to call your dad and ask if you can start calling him one day a week at a date and time convenient for him. And I thought, what an order. I can't go through with that. And because something had happened a few years prior that I won't share from the podium where I didn't think it was a good idea. And so I didn't take her direction for 3 months. And what happens for me is if I don't get into solution about something or I'm not following direction, I start to get in a lot of pain. And I get to a point where I'm going to either do it or I'm going to drink. And I got in a lot of pain in the toothpaste aisle at Target one night. And I had to get the phone number for my dad from another relative. And I called my dad and he answered on the first ring. And I think at this time he was living in Oregon. And I said, Dad, this is Ann. I was wondering if I could start calling you once a week. The time can be in for you. That'd be okay. And he was just like, yeah, I'd love that. And, you know, I was like, what? My father, you know? And you know, I just want to say that there's always a time for healing, you know, whatever it looks like in our life, that things can change, that what I perceived to be a hopeless situation can change, you know. And so I started to, and we don't always get our family relationships back, I'm not saying that either, but, you know, things can always change. There's, you know, you just never know. And so I started calling him once a week on Saturday mornings, and, you know, it was very awkward at first. I'm not going to lie. I'm like, how's the weather in Oregon, Father? You know, it was just, it was like very, I'm probably closer to my boss, you know, it was very strange. And so I began to invite myself to his house for Thanksgiving. And because about that weekend is about as long as we could handle, you know, and we started to watch all the rival college football games all weekend and sit in our lazy boys and eat pizza, you know, and I really got into football. I didn't know. That's the weird thing about sobriety. You learn, you're like, I love hockey. I had no idea. And so it's weird. Anyway, so I started to get a little closer and closer, and I eventually was able to make face-to-face amends to him, you know, the normal amends because we were talking. And, you know, a few years ago, my dad got very sick, and we thought he was going to die. And I got to be a daughter because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Had I not made those amends, I would not have even known that situation was happening, because a lot of my siblings weren't really speaking to him either. And then when I started speaking to my dad, they kind of followed suit and tried to start speaking it. So it's been, Alcoholics Anonymous has spread throughout my family. And so I was able to be a daughter, and I was able to send him encouragement cards and call him more than just once a week. And I would get these funny feelings. I'd be in my office, and I'm like, you need to call your dad. And I was like, I'm taught not to call my job, you know, but I'd shut my office door and call my dad. And he was like, I really needed you, you know. And now he's on the other side of what he went through. And he said, you know, when you really saved me. And he'll say that from time to time. And I'm like, no, Dad, it's not me. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. And he doesn't need me. He has a wife, you know. He doesn't need me. But we're so close. I'm closer to him now than I am with my best girlfriend. We can talk about anything. And what's really strange is I didn't know that a byproduct of healing that relationship would be healing. My relationship with men and how I interact with men. I didn't know that that was going to happen. And so I didn't date for my first 8 years of sobriety. This is not why I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was cool with that. I thought I was going to be like a nun in AA. Like, I was just going to be doing service work, sponsoring women, going to meetings. It was going to be my thing. And I was okay with that. I really was. I did not care if I ever dated again, because I was not good at that. And I had to go speak in San Diego on steps 4 and 5 on April 5th of last year. And I got an email from the secretary a week later saying, hey, do you remember this so-and-so in this meeting? He asked you this question. I'm like, I didn't really remember who it was. And he's like, can I give out your number to this person? I'm like, let me think about it for a day. And I was like, well, I haven't dated in 8 years. May as well practice. And so I finally gave my number out, and I was terrified. And then apparently we were set up. He did not ask for my number. And so he's like, I'm not calling her. And so his sponsor had to prod him into calling me, and we started a friendship. It was really silly. And we started a friendship, and then we began today. We've been dating since then. And, you know, it's pretty amazing to have a relationship based on the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to pray and meditate and put our meetings first and put our programs first. And we'll see where it's going to go. But it's really amazing so far. And, you know, I have been sponsoring women since I was 6 months sober. That was not my idea. It was my sponsor's idea. And what happened was I went on a panel at a recovery home, and this girl said, will you sponsor me? She had 8 days. I had 6 months. And I was taught to say yes, and so I did. And how it looked was she would call me and say, what do I do now? I'm like, one moment. Karen, what do I say now? And I would call her back. And that's kind of how it was. And Karen's like, you just got to stay one step ahead of her. I said, okay. And that's how it began. You know, that's been the real bright spot in my life, is to watch women get this thing and stay sober. And, you know, for probably like a year, I sponsored only felons. It was awesome. And and watch these women come out of prison and change their lives and go back to college and do all these things. It's pretty amazing, you know. And but Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a really, really deep sense of peace. And it doesn't mean that things don't go wrong. People die, you know, things happen. And, you know, you get through it sober, and we have each other to lean on. And, you know, my aunt got breast cancer in 2010 that helped me get sober, and she went through that treatment. I was able to go over to Hawaii and be with her and help take care of her, and she's in remission. And then I lived in Long Beach for like 6 years, and I worked there, and they wanted to raise my rent to like a mortgage amount, and I was like, I'm out of here. And so my friend Carrie said, you know, I just bought this house, you want to move in with me and rent a room? And I'm like, you know, I'm 37 years old, I don't know if I want to live with someone. And but I said, sure, let me come see the house. You know, there's a pool in the backyard and a really nice kitchen and atrium. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. And, you know, a week after I move in, she gets diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. And, you know, in my head, I'm like, oh, this is the reason I'm here. I'm, you know, super arrogant and I have to be of service. And, you know, the truth is she's taught me what it's like to walk through something with dignity and grace. And she's taught me what's important. You know, she was a secretary at the time of a large meeting in Long Beach, and she was going through chemo, and she would get up in front of everyone bald, and she didn't give up her commitment, and she'd have to sleep all day on Sunday just to have enough energy to do that. And, you know, she taught me, you know, what commitment is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, she's on the other side of her treatment, and hopefully everything's going to be okay. And, you know, I have had people pass away in this program. Not everyone gets to stay. So what I do today is I do the same thing I did when I got here. You know, I pray on my knees. I write a gratitude list. I started keeping a track of my numbers. I was 3450 today, my days. And I read the 24-hour day book, and I read the daily reflections, and I call my sponsor, and I speak to my sponsees, and I go to regular the same meetings each week, and I get there early, and I have commitments in those meetings. And I have a book study at my house with my sponsees once a month, which is really fun. And, you know, I have a good life today. And if you're new, I really encourage you to stay. I encourage you to give yourself a chance, get a sponsor, go through the 12 steps. You know, I was so angry when I got here, and I'm not that way today at all. I can go there if I don't maintain my spiritual condition, but I am not that way 98% of the time. And, you know, when I got here, I thought, you know what, I'm going to do the 12 steps, and if it doesn't work, I'm out of here. And it works. So I wish you guys all a long sobriety. Thank you.